Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The weather's turned, as they say. The weather's turned.
Storms.
Well, I actually quite enjoyed all that frost and that cold, though, because I had the Carrera tea. I went down New Forest, favourite place.
I love it.
And it was all icy and slippery, and I was like, oh, look at me go. I felt like I was in Sweden, sliding around like a driftmeister.
Did you end up in a bush?
No, oh no, but I nearly did. I went to Dunsfold.
Yeah.
One of my go-to filming roads. It's usually pretty quiet. It's got a real smooth section that then goes really bumpy.
Yeah.
Gave it large out of my corner, nearly died. I'll show you the clip after this. Like, on nearly died. And I was like, well, that's embarrassing. Oh, I'll leave it in there.
Did you leave it in?
Yeah, I left it in.
Yeah, good boy.
Pretended like it was on purpose. Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week. We hope you enjoy the episode. Tell me, did you survive the frosty conditions at the weekend?
Well, I nearly crashed the M3. Yeah. Apart from that, yeah, I did.
Incredible. How? Was the frost to blame or did you just pile it in?
No, I didn't pile it in. I had my children in the car.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I was driving nice and sensibly and I come off a slip
road.
I
hope so.
I was, yeah. Sometimes I drive brisk because Molly, my youngest daughter, she just goes, Daddy, faster, faster, faster. She loves it.
That's amazing.
But I was genuinely driving conservatively. I come off a big roundabout off the motorway onto a slip road and I turned the car left. Admittedly, I was in the outside of the two lanes and it went straight.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally went straight, mate. And to the point, I got so close to the barrier, I clipped the grass verge before the barrier.
Oh.
And I only didn't crash. So I just literally, I didn't touch the pedals and I just straightened the wheel out and the car straightened up.
So there's a few things going on. I think
I was flapping.
A lot of people got caught out like you, including myself. We'll come onto my story shortly.
You nearly crashed?
Yep, definitely. Two or three times. Because I saw a lot of people who had binned it over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, lots of other countries will laugh at us because it was what? Maybe in the morning, -3 or -4 degrees Celsius. By midday, it was 2 or 3. So it's not like some of the extreme weather you see in other parts of the world. But I just feel like we're unprepared for it in this country. Well, firstly, yes, I would suggest 95% or if not 99% of people in this country are still on summer tyres, not winter tyres. And the roads don't always get gritted or salted that well, like some of the main roads do. But as you say, roundabouts or outside lanes seem to sort of get forgotten. And I do feel like in this country, like black ice or black frost is a thing in the sense where it's hard to spot because you... Because our weather's a bit... Is it inclement? Anyway.
Don't ask me.
It's too early in the morning for big words, Tony. But long story short, we're not always expecting extreme weather. So you think, oh, it's cold this morning. But you don't think that means, oh, the roads are going to be screwed up. So people just send it as if it were dry like you did.
No, then, I didn't send it, mate. Like
well,
I
you
said.
Did. You went around the outside of a roundabout launching it in.
No, I didn't. I don't do that with kids in the car. Or actually, I only really do it when I'm on my own.
Sure.
When have you ever really been in the car with me on the road where I drive like an absolute lunatic? It won't be a thing, mate, because I won't do it with people in the car. I only do it when I'm on my own. Because I'm going to kill myself then, that's no problem. But
what a bright start to the episode. Well, I'm glad you survived. I'm glad the M3 survived. So, I would blame the tyres there, because obviously it's X-Drive, so you'd think at least... you'd get some kind of clever torque vectoring something going on.
I wouldn't blame the tyres at all. It was just too cold and the tyres were cold. I mean, don't matter if I'd have had winter tyres, I still would have gone then.
Do you think?
100%, yeah.
Because
yeah,
what do they say? It's winter tyres if the temperatures are below 7 degrees Celsius or below... I think it is.
It's got probably the best all-round road car tyres on anyway. It's got the PS4s on it. Which
but they're a bit sporty. They're a bit leery for cold conditions.
What, PS4?
PS4Ss, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But they're not a...
They're a sportier tyre.
Probably a sportier.
Pilot but Sport.
Yep.
Well, the clue is in the name.
Well, I find them very good.
They are. They are. And as I say, like... I work closely with Pirelli, but they're not paying me to say this. I see the benefits in changing to winter tyres in certain countries, and obviously parts of mainland Europe, Italy, and mountainous regions, you have to.
Yeah, yeah. Switzerland,
in this
Germany.
Country, until recently, it's felt like a bit of an overzealous move to bolt winter tyres on most cars, but we do get 5 to 10 days of weather per year where winter tyres may benefit you.
Some people, by the way, mate, live in the country and up north. I bet you'll find they do run around. They'll have a winter set in their garage.
I'm sure. Yeah. Like, I have had enough press conferences and read enough press materials to understand the benefits of winter tyres. I'm not knocking that.
Yeah.
But in this country, guaranteed, if we sit here and say to everyone, next year you should really get winter tyres, it will change your life, there will not be one day where they're appropriate. Do you see what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
We're not really a country where you get 3 or 4 months of needing winter tyres.
No.
We have, it's a week or 10 days.
Like where, our summer.
As I say, literally. We get 5 days of heat and 5 days of cold. Yeah. The rest of the time it's grey and
wet. Horrible, yeah.
But anyway, okay, fine. Well, you nearly died. I nearly died too. I had the Carrera T on loan. We're not going to go into too much because I've got a main channel video going live on Sunday.
I wrote that off on purpose, me. I'd have piled that into a bush just for the sake of it.
I was having a brilliant time at first. I was like, this is so much fun. Look at me go. I'm like a rally driver. Away. And then I went into a corner a bit too fast, gave it a bit too much gas on the exit and big tank slapper. I was like, whoa.
Left and right?
Left, right,
upside down. Did you pull that
down.
Funny face? That...
Yeah. I thought, bloody hell. You know when it kind of, life passes before your eyes. And I thought, this is a phone call to Porsche I don't want to make. You know, because it's just embarrassing. Because they would have said, well, it is cold. Why were you driving that fast? I was like, well,
I was testing the car.
Yeah, so I definitely nearly died in that, which was good. Did I die in anything else? No, I don't think I did. The i5 is so heavy that that's never sliding, that car.
No.
It weighs 85 tons.
You run out of electric before it slides.
And I didn't go in the Jag this week, so... Okay, well, nearly died but survived. So we live on. But look, talking of the Carrera T, I went to collect it from Porsche GB, which is also Porsche Reading.
Yeah.
Which is always full of the most interesting cars in terms of their forecourt and their car park.
Yep.
Because they have the... Is that the Porsche Retail HQ? That's like their flagship dealership.
It is, yes.
They do all the Carrera GTs and 918s and stuff.
Correct.
So yeah, their car park or forecourt is always full of very interesting cars. They had a very uniquely spec'd 992 GT3 Touring and 997.2 Turbo S. Lots of nice stuff like that. 1,000 Taycans. But then obviously on the other side of the car park, you have Porsche GB, so the headquarters of that, with all the press cars, marketing cars, staff cars. The reason I bring it up is I have noticed over the last 4 or 5 years that I've been working with Porsche, how much they are pushing or have adopted crazy colours into their range.
Yeah, that's where the money is.
Now, I hate to say you were right, Tony, or you told us, but I think we spoke about this quite a long time ago, the fact that manufacturers basically reacted to the uplift in vehicle wrapping, car wrapping, painted PPF, even just modifications, you know, black wheels, you know, that became such a fad for a long time. And, you know, some manufacturers roll that out. And Porsche are one that I just feel like are leading the way in that sense, where on most of their standard range now, you can choose pretty exciting colours. So if you go and spec a Carrera T, you can get that Ruby Star Neo, the pinky colour, which used to be a special optioned colour. And BMW, I think, are pretty good with their individual range.
I think the difference with Porsche as well is because... not to me, but to the general public, they're still considered a niche, smallish brand, as in, you know, it's sort of an alternative to Ferrari or Lamborghini. But when you look at the cars, then, I mean, they are a full-on mass brand now, mate. Mm-hmm. I mean, You know, so they adopt that smaller brand special mentality, but really they're the likes of BMW, Audi, Mercedes, not quite as big, but they are a mass car maker, which is why they've got to do so many electric models because of their CO2 emission things as well. Whereas, you know, some of the smaller brands, they have to do less because their factory doesn't emit as many emissions, essentially. So, look, Ferrari have been doing it for a very, very long time. Then Lamborghini. McLaren have done it with their MSO quite a while as well.
Yeah.
But Porsche have obviously just took the idea and put it into mass, basically.
Because, as I say, it's the standard palette that they are seemingly focused on. And maybe it's been the uplift and interest in paint-to-sample colours, the popularity of unique shades. Obviously, once they're in the standard palette, they're no longer that unique.
No.
But I just was aware, it's a very colourful car park. When you arrive at Porsche GB or Porsche Reading, it's a very colourful car park. And I, you say, don't know where that came from, because historically, especially in this country, it was grey, black and dark blue, right?
Yeah, you know, for sure.
We have very bland coloured cars, historically.
I mean, all around the world, mate, in general. You know, when you go all around the world, the most popular colours are grey, black,
white.
Blue, white.
Yeah.
Silver was a while, it's topped off a bit, or toweled off a bit, sorry. But yeah, they were the four or five main colours, essentially.
Would you... I know you love your blacks. If I force you to choose a colour, is there a colour you lean towards usually for your cars?
I like a grey. I like crayon. I like a nice blue.
There we go. That's a colour, because the other ones were just different shades of black. But
no,
all right.
Yeah. But the probably my two favourite cars I've ever had were both blue. The coupe light blue California Pista that I had.
Yep.
And the blue Nart Pista Spider.
Absolutely, you're right.
They were probably my two nicest cars that I've had, and they were both blue.
Yeah, okay.
So, but normally I go...
You like darker colours?
Well, because I always got my...
Resale
motor trade head on.
Of course,
so
you have.
I'm always thinking about how I get out of it. You know, like if you order a snot green Porsche, you know, it's going to be harder to get out of than a black one. It just is.
Not if you have Pasha seats, though. Then they fly out the door.
Yeah,
especially if you have four Pasha seats.
Oh my god! Well, do we talk about that?
Yeah, I mean we can, but I got to be honest. Based on the comments of my YouTube video, I'm not sure I can be.
You put it out? It's got.
So it went out.
They've gone in on you?
Well, no, but just boring comments. You're like,
right.
Why would you put your daughter in a GT3? She's going to go deaf.
Yeah, I agree.
What?
What? That was me who wrote that.
Dick. You know, I'm so fortunate where you, the podcast audience, and my main channel audience are usually very intelligent, lovely people that I adore engaging with and reading comments from.
Mm.
But every now and again, I put out a video that just seems to attract strange people.
I don't think they're followers, mate. I think the core people are very, as you said, intelligent. Mm. And then occasionally we attract some stupid people.
Well, you know, I get it. It's a weird and controversial thing to do, right? Putting rear seats in a GT3.
Yeah.
And there's going to be people who are just, you know, obsessed with that color. You've ruined the entire ethos of that car. And what is the point? It's a GT3. It should be. I get it. Like, I totally understand where you're coming
from. No, it's your car.
But there we go.
Yeah.
That's the point. And I tried to explain in the video the reason I chose this company, GT3 Belts, is because they keep with the ethos of a GT3, i.e. lightweight. They do everything they can to keep the weight down and reduced, so they use the same lightweight sound insulation and all these different things, and people are going,
why have they just done that? That's crap.
And I'm like, well, because you just said it needs to be light, it needs to be so we're trying to stick with that.
Mm.
So for example, you know this because we actually got into the back of a 992 at your dealership. The rear upper back bench of a rear, sorry, the back bench of a rear seat in a 992 is a disaster.
Yeah, the getting into both of them were just as bad.
And it offers no protection, nothing. It's a 2+2, so it's got no headrest, got no restraint. It's a disaster. But everyone was just going, this is so dangerous. You should have the back bench. I was like, well, have you actually sat in a 992 and experienced the back bench? Anyway, as you can see, I'm a little bit riled up by it. So,
but you shouldn't be, mate, because if that's what you want, then that's it. Then, you know, you haven't got to speak about it again. It's your car. If that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do.
But I, Tony, I can't help it. The internet's still 10 years on. the comment section can still get under my skin.
Yeah, but yeah, I can get that because sometimes, you know, it winds me up for 3 or 4 seconds, and then I think, well, you know, who cares?
Yeah, no,
where's your GT3? Yeah,
it's a good mentality, I suppose. But as I say, so we're going to move on from it. I'm happy. I'm excited. I thought the work that was done was
so
great.
And you got Ferrari as well. I mean, flipping hell, mate. And you got a Ferrari. You used to get driven in a Rolls Royce to school. You got a Ferrari and
a
Porsche.
It was a Range Rover. It wasn't a Rolls Royce.
There's a BMW knocking around somewhere. There's a Jag, big high-powered Jaguar that does 4 to the gallon. I mean,
look at me.
You're not doing too bad, son.
Now, I wanted to touch on your S500, which I believe is now sold.
I sold it in minutes.
Unbelievable. I mean, ridiculous. What a cool car.
Lovely car.
Because it got me thinking, the minute you told me about the price of that car and everything that was going on, I thought, wow. There's got to be a few other super luxe cars that have suffered these aggressive depreciation. Because what would that car have been new? 100 grand?
Over, yeah.
Over 100 grand.
And that's very normal, by the way, as in, you know, they've always depreciated like a stone.
Yeah.
Always.
Always. And it's usually been things like A8s, S-Classes, 7 Series. But that's an attractive thing, the big...
840 BMWs, 640
BMWs. Hold
BMW.
On. you've just taken my point out of my mouth.
Panameras.
Oh, what a dream.
And when we keep going, if you want.
Because that's what I was going to come tell you. I had a look around, mate.
Oh, good.
To see what's going on.
Lovely.
And 840i's. Yeah. Mate, they
what
are...
Car?
What a bargain. Because slightly newer than the S-Class. You're looking at a 2018, 2019 car. 840i, beautiful looking thing, modern tech, BMW infotainment system, similar kind of money. Insane bargain.
But I'd still have the S-Class over that car.
Would you?
Oh, mate, that S-Class literally still drove like a modern car today. Mm. People forget that, you know, when S-Classes come out, they normally lead the way in tech and, you know, innovation and stuff.
Sure.
And it still felt like a modern car. Yeah. I drove it back from Northamptonshire, so I done 100-odd miles in it. And
but it's just the tech, right, that lets you down?
Well, it had the advanced modern tech from Mercedes at that time.
Sure.
And it still looks okay, but yeah, it's not as good as a 2023 or 2024 car. And, like I always say, there's probably going to be a bill at some point.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
There's probably
going to
be a bill.
That's the problem with it. You know, you're driving really a 100 grand-ish car for 35 grand, you know, so the bill's still the same, mate. There's still
and
a fortune.
And a Mercedes in general expensive to run, or is that a bad assumption?
Servicing costs are quite expensive still compared to the competitors because they're still on annual servicing, whereas most of the competitors now are on biannual. So, yeah, servicing costs are expensive. But in general, mate, they're pretty good now.
They're pretty good.
It'd be electrical stuff.
It's just been minor because it's a nearly 10-year-old car, that car.
Correct.
Yeah. Whereas, and here we go, I get to bring in Stockwatch. Perfect timing.
Uh-huh.
Here's a 840i that I found. So this is a BMW Farnborough. Uh-huh. 45 grand for a 2022 840i.
Great car.
5,000 miles on the clock with the M Sport Pro Pack. I mean, that's nearly brand new car, mate.
75, 80 grand car.
Yeah. Beautiful spec. Blue with the light cream interior.
Yeah.
2022 car, mate.
Yeah.
I know the 850i is maybe the more equivalent to the S500.
Correct.
But I just still think they're advertising as a PCP of 585.
Yeah.
What a thing. I almost want to go and buy it now. It's so cool.
But this is the thing, because we've lived in this bubble where everything's been so expensive and now it's all come back down. Like when you look around now, you think, you know, cars now have never been cheaper than they have the last few years. So you look at stuff now and you think, flipping hell, what a lot of car that is. And obviously, as dealers, when we're buying cars, because over the last couple of years, we've been looking at cars and thinking, God, that's a lot of money, that car. But you've got to buy it because you've got to stock it, you know. And that's the thing, like, people sometimes say to me, Tony, you knew that this big drop has been coming for a long time. You spoke about it. Why have you been caught with all the depreciation? It's because I can't sell empty spaces.
Yeah.
You know, I have to keep going with the market and hope I don't get caught too much. You can't. We all know it's coming, but you can't have a forecourt full of nothing.
Yeah, you won't make any.
It's worse, even worse.
It's so, like Martin Brundle always says on the F1 commentary: the best tire to be on is the no. What is it? This is going to work really well. But he's talking about, you know, when it's interchangeable conditions, yeah, and you're the fastest tire is the tire for that lap. You know what I mean?
Like, correct.
You've got to be on at that right moment. At that point right there. Yeah. You can't think, oh, in five laps time, it's going to be raining, so I'll put the wets on now.
Correct.
You've got to keep the dries on until it's raining type thing. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, as I say, from a stock watch point of view, that 840i I absolutely love. And so someone else go and buy it, because... at that money, mate, 500 quid a month. Mm. I'm all over that, mate. I love my modern BMWs. They are quite big, the 8 Series. But anyway, that's a lovely spec. Now. 2022 car, winner. My next stock watch, Tony's done none, by the way, this week, because he's been busy selling cars. So stock watch is all with me. But that's all right, you can react. I sent you this link in the week. The incredible RS4 at Epsom Audi.
But that's not good value for money.
Well, hold on a sec, because this is off the back of our chat last week where we spoke about RS4s and RS products in general.
Yeah.
So I found this one, which I thought was lovely. It's a 2015 car.
Yeah, last of them.
It's got the bucket seats inside, which is super nice.
Is it like a sport edition or an edition something?
I don't think so.
Okay, it's a good spec one.
Yeah, good spec. Sunroof, sports exhaust, B&O, 48,000 miles.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
And 35 grand.
Yeah.
Now, you say that's not good value. That's a more expensive RS4. A 2015 RS4 for sure. You can find some closer to 30 than 35. Yeah, but for that spec, and it's a main dealer.
Yeah.
So what will they offer you? Will they give you some extra warranty or anything?
Well, you'll get a main dealer warranty with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But once they're used, mate, the main dealer warranties are not really any better than the warranties you get from
independents.
No, because they're not underwritten by the manufacturer anymore. So
it's just a used approval.
Like, yeah, it's just got their stamp on it. But the warranties will still not cover. If you've got a manufacturer warranty, for instance, 0 to 3 year old car, it's belt and braces. It's everything. But once obviously a car becomes nearly 10 years old, there's obviously certain things where they'll say, well, sorry, sir, that's not covered because it's 10 years old. It's used. It's a used car. So whereas a new car, if anything goes wrong, pretty much it's covered.
So the interesting thing here is, right, if you take these two cars that I've pulled out for this week,
yeah,
I see what you're saying by that's not good value, in the sense where that's a 2015 car with 50,000 miles at 35 grand, where that 840i is 2 years old with less than 5,000 miles, and there's a 10 grand price difference. And I bet, you correct me if I'm wrong, that RS4 will not be cheap to finance.
No.
Because it's an older car.
You can't PCP it.
So residual values and things like that. Obviously, you could argue that maybe the balloon would be quite high because it's...
Well, there's very, very specialist banks that will finance that car, and you'll find what happens in general, you've got to wait for a man cash, or he's trading up for part exchange, which is another reason why I try not to sell high-value older cars, because you're limiting your market and you're limiting the person that can buy it, because... Mm-hmm. Not too many people have got 35 grand just hanging around. But they can afford 500 quid a month. So that's the difference. And that'll be the difference between that 840 and that...
Well, you've got 500 quid a month PCP through BMW again. But both of these are main dealer cars,
warranty.
By the way. Manufacturer warranty, looked after, things like that. Around 500 quid a month PCP. Or you're going to be looking probably around, at least 800 or 900 quid on a...
HP, again.
Depends on deposits and everything.
It depends on everything, mate. Like, and as well, like people, you're still 10% APR.
Yeah,
so people just go, you know, I'll just pay for it. So, what's obviously happened there is that the RS4 has the depreciation hasn't been as high. You know, that car would have been 60 grand new.
Yeah.
So it's done well. Whereas the 840 would have been 75.
It's just tanked.
So it's lost more money, basically, than the RS4's done in 4 years. And I took a car in stock the other day that was very, very similar to the RS4. I took a Focus RS in.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like an RS edition. So
What generation?
68 plates.
The drift mode.
The drift mode car. And they've done well.
Yeah.
So, because they're 35 grand new.
Mm-hmm.
This car's still going to be 29 grand. With 40,000 miles on it.
Wow.
So
that's happy motoring, isn't it?
It's all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not bad. So, but the difference is that car, you still PCP it because it's only 4-odd years old.
Is that your stock watch? Are you stock watching stock? Actually, Sam, I do have something I can include in stock watch this week.
No, it's only because I was thinking of value for money.
Yeah,
no,
fair.
That's the one in between, really, where it's not really done a lot of money and won't now, obviously, because it's past that point, and you can still PCP it.
Yeah.
So that's incredible value.
That's a future topic, isn't it? Because I'm sure, actually, I can speak to Magnitude about this and get some insights. I think what would be fascinating is the cars that seem good value in terms of price, advertised price, but actually are more expensive to finance than you think, and vice versa. Because as I say, an old RS4, you look at it, oh, what a car for 30 grand, like amazing. Unless you've got the cash, that actually might end up being double the money per month of an M2.
Yeah, well, you're going to speak to Magnitude for, yeah. But I can tell you all that.
Well, I just thought I'd get all the quotes from you. Okay. Can you do quotes?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
I'll do everything, mate. It's all up here, son.
Sorry, Magnitude, you've been usurped. Tony's your new competitor.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's that car going to be? What's that RS4 going to be financed? Five grand in.
It won't be a lot.
No, but what is
the RS what, sorry?
RS4, the one that stopwatch.
Oh, it'll still be a few quid.
But what... Don't tell me a number. You just said 100...
30 grand on HP.
Yeah.
Oh, 700 or 800 pound a month.
Okay. I'll get a quote from Magnitude.
I won't be far off.
Okay.
Do it now.
Do it now. Let's move on and move away from Stockwatch. Got some car news to discuss. Now,
we haven't.
At the time that this episode is posted, to YouTube at least, the Macan EV is going to be unveiled.
Oh.
I did actually ask Porsche for an under embargo press release so that we could discuss it. Haven't replied to me.
Actually coming.
Fully revealed.
Right.
Yeah, the whole deal. So we'll have to talk about that next week. So apologies if you're tuning in to get McCann EV news. We've got a few other bits that we can discuss that have basically been launched or unveiled over the last few weeks that we haven't discussed. So firstly, did you see, sticking on the BMW theme, they're bringing back a manual Z4.
Are they?
Yeah.
What, like the bread van one?
No.
Oh.
That would be really cool. So I guess this is off the back of the manual Supra?
Yeah.
So
same car.
There's a manual, I think it's the M40i? Let's just check.
Yeah.
Manual Z4. Now, I am obviously a manual fan.
Mm.
We know that you're not. But I think we can be realistic in the fact that manuals are kind of going out of popularity. Like that's quite rogue for a manufacturer to bring back a manual gearbox. Here we go. BMW has finally announced its Z4 sports car will be available with a manual gearbox nearly a year after the three-pedal setup was added to the Supra.
Mm.
It will be in the range-topping 335 horsepower M40i.
I wonder who's done that, whether that's actually Toyota or BMW who have done that, whether that's a Toyota gearbox or a BMW one, because the BMW manual gearboxes are horrendous.
BMW will probably not utilise the same manual gear linkage from the Supra. Toyota developed a new weighted gear knob and built quite a few bespoke components for the manual Supra.
Right.
The manual Z4, on the other hand, will likely have its own feel with elements taken from other BMWs, like the previous generation M240i and M340i. Both of which use a manual gearbox. The Z4s, blah, 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 blah.
So if you want a manual with that engine, buy the Supra, because it'll be better.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it will be.
I mean, great. Well,
they've got a bit of a shorter throw normally, the Toyota manuals, as in it's not as long.
I didn't love the manual M2, the latest M2.
No.
It was squidgy, that gearbox.
Yeah, but in general, mate, when you go down the line BMWs, They've never really done great manuals.
Even if you go back to the great generation of E30s.
Oh, yeah, fine.
But the modern stuff.
The modern stuff, yeah. But that, I don't think they're very good at
the manuals. Thing is, though, you definitely know better than most here. How many people are going in and ordering a manual Z4?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
We're moving forward. Because that car is a weird one, isn't it? It's the Z3, I think, was mega. It was a Boxster rival. It was, you know, Z3 M Coupe and things like that. You know, it had its niche and it was an enthusiast's car. But I think in recent years, the Z4 especially has gone more towards the sort of Sunday driver thing. It's, you know, it's not an enthusiast car. It's just someone who likes a convertible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some demand for it because they're doing it. But whether they're doing it because Toyota are doing it and they're going to nick their gearbox, there's not really too much development to it. They're just going to change a couple of bits. But you know, but like we've said before, they normally put automatic gearboxes in, one, because the cars are too fast, and secondly, that's what the public demand.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so they do what the public, like the paint to sample stuff.
I think they've seen a surprising amount of interest in the manual Supra and they've gone, oh, we need to put this in the Z4.
Probably.
I think they've been surprised by how many people have bought that manual Supra and that's why they've done it.
And they're going to charge for it, by the way.
Oh, so, yeah, well, yeah. It's like $3,500 in the US. Yeah. They haven't announced UK pricing, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just, you know, I'm like, cool, great, like long live the manual. I'm a manual fan, but that's not a car that I don't think Z4 buyers necessarily were going, if only this car came in a manual.
No, it should definitely suit the Supra more than the BMW.
I still haven't driven that new Supra, by the way.
Haven't you?
No, if you get one in stock, let me know.
I will, yeah. Have a go. Well, I've had a few of them, though. They're a good car.
Well, speaking of Toyota, what perfect segue into facelift Yaris, GR Yaris.
New car.
Yeah.
Apparently as well. It's like literally a new car. Going to offer an automatic gearbox as well.
Automatic gearbox. So here we go. It's revealed at the Tokyo Auto Show. Host of mods see max power climb from 257 to 276. So nearly a 20 horsepower boost. Actually, no, just over 20 horsepower. That's my maths, isn't it? And 266 to 288 pound foot torque. Mm-hmm. They got a stronger valve train, sturdier exhaust valve materials, increased fuel injection pressure, new lightweight pistons and wear resistant wings all help the Yaris thrash, take more of a thrashing for longer. Meanwhile, rigidity is up as well. The suspension has been toughened. The spring weights have been revised. I mean, it just goes on and on. Here we go.
Yeah.
8-speed auto from the Gazoo Racing Department, which I think will be interesting, actually.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what else is interesting is that them GR Yaris's up until now have really done well value-wise.
Yeah.
As in, now they're not going to, because apparently they were going to make 25,000 of them. Now, there's a new car coming out.
Yeah.
They're going to make another 25,000 of them or whatever. There's going to be millions of them. So it'd be good for the general public because they are a great car, them little Yaris.
Great car. And I, oh God,
but they're too expensive now for what they are.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we're talking about this, about price of new cars. Mm. The market is just moving forward. Everything is more expensive. What did I drive the other day? The Carrera T, we can talk about that. It's not reviewing the car.
No.
The price of the car I drove was 113 grand. Mm. I mean, it's essentially a base 911.
Uh-oh.
It's very hard to buy a new 911 these days under 100 grand.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is crazy. So, everything is just more expensive. They haven't announced, I don't think, the pricing of that facelift GR Yaris yet. What was the original one, 31 or 32 grand, something like that?
A bit more than that, yeah. A bit more. 32 and a half, 33 grand-ish with the circuit pack.
35 feels like it could be right, but you think it's going to push up towards 40?
No. I don't think you'll be far off 35 grand. But don't forget, mate, we live in a different world now. It'll be 35 grand. There's some money off. Low APR finance. So what happens to the old car is the old car will have to have another adjustment.
Yeah.
They already have had a little adjustment, but it's going to have another one.
Sure.
So.
But then what a great car at 25 grand.
But they're definitely going to be that. They'll be 19,995, mate.
Unbelievable. Yeah. What a thing. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm excited about that new GR Yaris, and I'm intrigued by the automatic one. I know it's a real little driver's car that probably will still make most sense with the manual, but if it's a GR Gazoo Racing developed auto box, suggests that it's not going to be completely awful.
That might be a bit more. That might be 37 grand, the auto car. Yeah. I don't know.
I just want to see what it would be like. Yeah. It'd be interesting.
I'd love to drive it.
Yeah.
Bit of lift off over, so you keep your foot in, big crash.
Well, from the, not the bottom end of the market, but from spicy hot hatches, let's go right to the top. Two interesting developments in the world of hypercars, our favourite topics.
Oh.
So firstly...
Oh.
Red Bull. Do you know about the RB17?
Well, what do you make that car?
No, they didn't.
When the F1?
Mm-mm.
Skipped it?
Yeah, because that was the COVID car. Oh. They skipped it. They went straight to RB18.
Right.
So the RB17 is the missed car, which is a road car.
So they've just slotted that in, have they?
Yeah. So basically...
It's a Honda.
No, what? No. What are you on about, Honda?
Well, they're loosely used Honda stuff, so engine-wise, no?
Oh, in the actual race cars?
Yeah.
Oh, no, so this is a road car. This is a road car. Essentially, it's the Valkyrie, but with Adrian Newey's hands not tied by Aston Martin. Because he walked away, or there was a bit of a rumour has it, yeah, that there was a little bit of a falling out and a little bit of, along the Valkyrie process, Aston Martin pushing back a bit, saying like, no, that costs too much, we can't do that, that's unnecessary. And Adrian Newey basically went, I'm over this, yeah, I'm walking away.
And
Aston Martin
finished
the project, and it was sort of, you know, the design of the Valkyrie was penned from Adrian Newey, and then they distanced themselves. And obviously, as we know, Aston Martin now have their own Formula One team. They no longer have the association with Red Bull. So once that sort of falling out happened, I think Adrian went back to Christian Horner and Red Bull and said, okay, well, let's just pick up where I left off and actually build the car that I wanted to, theoretically. Yeah. So that's the rumour. I think it's a hybrid V8. It's going to be 1250 horsepower rather than 1,000 or so that's in the Valkyrie. But same kind of thing, heavily track-focused. Mainly a track day toy that could be road legalised rather than a GT3 RS type thing. You know, it's a track day.
Yeah. So it's more like a Valkyrie or a Senna or something like
Valkyrie
that.
Valkyrie AMR.
Right, okay. Oh, wow.
Like it's going to be basically a track day toy that you could road legalise if you needed to type thing. Okay. Only about 50 cars, I think. Right. They're saying they're all sold. But it's likely to be unveiled this year.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Interesting and intriguing.
Yeah.
And in our whole chat of Aston Martin Valkyries and all this kind of stuff, obviously very excited that Aston Martin now said that they want to take that car to Le Mans. That will completely change the identity of that car depending on what it achieves. But will the Adrian Newey designed, developed, delivered car from Red Bull, the championship winning Formula One team, hold more weight or merit than the Aston Martin badged Adrian Newey penned Valkyrie? It's quite a weird thing, isn't it?
I think so.
As history goes on, which one are we going to look back on? Obviously, we haven't seen the RB17 yet. We don't know much about it, apart from the very top line details.
It's like a Gordon Murray car, they'd be all getting really excited because of Adrian Newey compared, like Gordon Murray. You know,
yeah,
you know,
the designer sort of carries more weight than the actual product. You know, we don't know the product yet, but I'm intrigued. Yeah. I'm excited. It's Red Bull's first foray into road cars. And he is a bit of a genius, Adrian Newey, in the same way that Gordon Murray is. So this is him without his hands being tied by a major manufacturer.
Yeah. And they've obviously found 50 people to sell it to because they're all sold.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Well, if you're a billionaire and someone comes up and says, this is the Adrian Newey, this is what the Valkyrie should have been.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know a couple of people who walked away from Valkyrie when Adrian Newey walked away from it. Yeah, so yeah. This could be the car for them.
It's another car for their collection.
Yeah. Super interesting. Yeah. But also interesting that it's mild hybrid V8,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is, I guess...
Aston Martin engine?
No, I don't... let's just see if they've got details on that. I don't know if the engine...
That's what I'm saying. Is it Honda derived or what is it? Is it?
But don't forget to say is it a Honda? That's a Formula One engine. Is it a Honda drive? I don't think it's
the size of Valkyrie.
No, but they're not putting it because that's a hybrid V6.
Fair,
but it's not a Formula One engine in the Valkyrie. Yeah, it's a Cosworth developed specific car engine for that car. It's nothing to do with F1.
Yeah, but it might not be having anything to do with F1. But they rode it on the marketing was. Very heavily. It's like the AMG Project One thing. It was all...
But that is a developed F1 engine.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that we're all marketed around these are equivalent to F1 cars, whether they're not F1 engines or not, you know, like the Aero and this and that.
Do you know what I mean? I think the Valkyrie claimed it had aero insights from an F1 designer.
Yeah.
Project One claimed it was a variation of the F1 engine, which we now know is a very diluted version of.
Yeah.
But I definitely don't think Valkyrie ever claimed it was an F1 engine.
Right.
The one that is that weird Solus GT from McLaren, which is like isn't it a Judd bastardized Le Mans engine or something like that?
No, I don't know. They all go over my head, mate.
So hold on a sec. Let's see if they talk about the engine. Red Bull Advanced Technologies. This is an autocar article. There's a lot in common between this and Formula One car in terms of its engineering principles and used to design it. We know how loud. Gray added the hybrid unit's power contribution will be significant. Oh, okay. What is it? It will sound fantastic, like a track car should. He declined to reveal powertrain details, but said the power unit will be produced to our specification by a third party, not by the nascent Red Bull Powertrains division.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's probably going to be Cosworth or something like that.
You know, yeah. He's got a good V8.
Yeah, a hybrid V8. I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting. It said, Newey said the unit will be a twin turbo V8. What is going on? I'm confused by this now. Further clarify that the power unit will be a twin turbo V8.
It's BMW
with
engine.
With ERS.
It's BMW.
So, twin
engine.
Turbo is a hybrid. I thought it was a hybrid. Yeah, it is a hybrid. A hybrid twin turbo V8.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. There we go.
But it's an M5 engine.
Got there in the end.
Imagine if it is.
Well, from Formula One derived ice engines. Well, not completely. Anyway, I don't know what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to segue cleverly here and I'm not doing very well. Rimac have come out with quite an interesting statement. So you know about Rimac, right?
I know about them, yeah.
Of course. And you know about their founder, Matej Rimac, who's now, I guess, CEO of Bugatti as well or something like that.
Well, he will be involved with Bugatti for sure, yeah.
Well, part owns it.
Part owns it, yeah.
Anyway, total G. And quite a visionary. Because whatever you think of Rimac and their cars themselves, a bit like with Tesla, where he's been a genius, is in development of technologies.
Yeah.
You know, of batteries and all of these different things.
Yeah.
Long story short, he's come out and said that Rimac's next supercar might not be battery electric, as in a BEV. So what he said is that they are looking at all kinds of future technologies because that's what Rimac really represents. And one area that they're quite intrigued by is nanocell. Don't know what that is. Nanocell electric technology. So this is a way to use diesel, hydrogen, or even just petroleum to fuel an electric motor.
Oh, I think he's a genius there. I mean, what he's done, I think this could be the real reason why he's got involved with Bugatti. I think he knows what's coming.
He said the reason that they're looking into it, and apparently they're investing in or analysing a small company that are leading the way in this technology, is for sports cars, i.e. the Rimac supercars, the Bugatti hypercars, etc. It gets rid of the whole weight issue.
Yeah, and we always, the general public, always thought, I mean, there'll be definitely a reason why he's purchased Bugatti.
Well, it's such a complicated
deal,
isn't it?
It's so complicated. But what I'm saying is he's got in bed with Bugatti.
And Porsche.
And Porsche.
And VW. And
yeah.
Yeah, but I got what you're saying. Go on.
Because we always thought, well, he's got involved because the new Bugattis are going to be all electric and they're going to take Rimac tech. But maybe the bloke's actually an absolute genius and it's going to be the other way around.
But this is the thing is, I think he is a genius.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to meet him at one point and I learned a bit about his history. And like he built like an electric M3 when he was like 16.
Yeah,
I mean, like
yeah.
He's just a bit too forward thinking. It's a bit unnerving.
Yeah.
And he's definitely clocked onto the fact that batteries, not electric, but batteries are not great when it comes to sports cars.
Mm.
And that it may be worth looking into other technologies. Now, in the release or the article that I saw, he obviously admitted that, of course, there are still emissions. If you're using any kind of fuel, you're still going to have emissions. But I think it's something like 80% more efficient or effective using nano cell technology rather than a battery in terms of powering an electric motor or a combustion engine. So essentially, the emissions are a lot lower. The efficiency is a lot greater. And it's something that you could look at for the likes of a Bugatti or a Rimac supercar or Ferrari. We always know that hybrid feels like it might be a solution that is way more adoptable in a quicker sense and especially give options for the likes of Ferrari, Porsche. If Formula One have been leading the technology of hybrids for X amount of years,
yeah,
that's going to come down to road cars more and more so. The development of cleaner fuels, i.e. synth fuels, you know, my work with P1 fuels has taught me a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's one option. So I just find it fascinating that the guy who's really led the way in terms of...
And Elon.
Technology. Yes, and Elon, but Rimac in a sort of advanced technologies ways. You know, I think Elon's been a mass consumer technology kind of way, and infrastructure's been his big thing with the supercharger network, where Rimac have been like... For what's called charging, no, that's pun intended. Anyway, leaders in terms of sports car battery development, but tech, you know, they do so much which goes under the radar, which you don't know at.
Yeah,
it's Rimac technology being used in X car, Y car, Z car.
Yeah, yeah.
That he's come out saying, well, look, you know, we're now starting to look at things that are non battery, because obviously, you know, batteries as well, they take a lot of resources out of the world, that they're hard to produce, they're hard to get rid of. You know, there's not... Batteries aren't great. Electric vehicles are one thing, but batteries aren't great.
I think we should take some credit. I bet he listens to the podcast and he's thought, these boys, they're onto something here. I'm going to create something and I'm going to credit them when I've done it.
It's another I told you so t-shirt moment. We should send him one. Oh, actually, on that, hold on. Actually, no.
Oh.
I was about to tease. Right behind the camera, we have prototype... Behind the glass merch, Tony.
Oh.
And I was about to show it on camera, but I thought, actually, no.
No.
Let's hold tight.
Just hang on a minute.
Yeah, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
But and also in that pile, there's not an I told you so t-shirt, which is coming soon, because clearly Matteo Rimac needs one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think too, I know hypercars are not usually our jam, usually, and we're a bit like, whatever.
They just go
snore.
Over my head. That's,
but
you
that's
know,
two quite interesting hypercars, I think.
Very interesting, because it's the future, mate.
It's future.
We're trying to look into the future, aren't we?
Yeah, you know, we don't want to be old men, they say.
We are old.
Bring back the Mondeo. What an engine. but anyway, well, let's watch this space. But that's a bit of car news. I say sorry that we didn't have McCann EV chat. Let me just see, Hansa. I'm going to triple check that hasn't come through whilst we've been...
That's a topic, by the way, as you said that. Bring back the engine.
Oh, modern engine. What are you going to say now?
No. Engines that have died that were fantastic. As in brilliant engines.
The V10.
That have, like, they're just no more. As in, you know, there'll be loads.
Go on, name one.
Mondeo V6 engine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
No.
But do you want to do a whole episode on that?
I mean, we can talk some crap, but I don't think we can do that for an hour. I mean,
I struggle a bit there with the whole, like, engine thing.
But
I'm just not, because for me, a car is, yes, soul, emotion, character, personality, but also looks and aesthetic. And I know the engine is 90% of that for sure. But
so
I don't.
Why can't we talk about it?
Because I don't buy a car and go, oh, because it's got the B58 turbo injected. You know, I'm like,
you don't buy a car for an engine?
Yes and no. Of course, the engine is a huge part of it, but it's not the like, I don't buy a car because it has that V8, or I don't seek out a car because I think it's got the greatest V6. Like, do you know what I mean?
Oh, I think a lot of people buy the car just for the engine, mate. I'm pretty sure that a lot of people buy cars because of the engine. It's like ordering a person with no heart.
I'm sure you're right, and obviously the F8 Tributo is a send-off to the greatest Ferrari engine ever made. And you know, I don't know what that accent was.
It wasn't Italian.
I am totally with you. I'm definitely not disagreeing with you because engine is soul, character, personality. My Chancellor Dali is the engine.
Yeah.
But I also don't care about engines. Like, I couldn't tell you, if we did a whole episode on great engines that ceased to have existed, I couldn't name you one.
You wouldn't have bought that Challenger Dali if it had a 2-litre four-part engine in it.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Well, but, there you go. This is about the engine.
Agreed. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I couldn't name you one engine that has ceased to exist that I miss. I couldn't do it.
Mm.
You did the Mondeo V6. Like, cool, mate.
Fair.
If the V8 as an engine in general died, I would miss it.
Well, I'll tell you an engine that we both love, which is dying, the Merc V8 engine, the twin turbo one. I mean, it is still around, mate, but it's dying. It's in lesser and lesser models.
But
it'd be dead in a minute.
But the V8 will still exist in some shape or form in other cars. As I say, I will miss a certain, like we talked about the V10 maybe going. If the V10 completely dies from existence, I will be sad. It's an iconic sounding and acting engine. But I don't miss a specific engine. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
I love V8s, and that's why, you know, the Challenger Dali V8 is amazing. And you're right, if I have a 2-litre four-cylinder, well, I wouldn't have bought it. I just mean specific engines versus engine types. That's what I'm trying to say. I like a V8. V8 is my go-to. I like a V12 in certain situations.
I'll tell you what a lot of people miss. The Speciale engine. I know.
But that's a specific engine.
Yeah, fair. But it's not here anymore. They'll miss it.
The naturally aspirated Ferrari V8.
Yeah, yeah. I don't necessarily miss that particular engine personally, but a lot of people would miss that.
Yeah, but it still exists. You go buy it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm all for...
You can't order it in a car
I like the 296 engine. I like the 488 engine. I like the F8 Tributo.
Me
I like
too.
The Pista.
Me too.
So I'm a bit like, you. If you really, really miss that old natural... Go and buy a Challenger Dali. It's the best investment you can make. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Like so I just don't have that same... I don't know how to explain it.
I know what you're trying to say, mate, but... Yeah, I don't think we could talk about it for an hour, could we?
No. Well, I couldn't.
No.
I couldn't. It is the makeup and the personality of a car.
Yeah.
But as I say, like, I just go and buy a different car. I don't know.
The V10 M5.
Yeah, cool.
Gone.
Well, no, but
terrible.
It's not gone. Go buy it.
No, but you can't order it anymore. Why do you think some of these manufacturers are going back to their roots? And bringing all these retro cars back out
again. But do you want a V10 M? I mean,
no, I couldn't think of anything worse. But there are people out there that would have got in the modern car and wished this had a V10 in it now.
Okay, so maybe you're getting to the crux of the argument, and maybe that's what we could talk about, which is cars or models or manufacturers that have changed for the worse.
Yeah.
So the C63. For example,
that's it.
So that maybe, and when the M3 went from V8
to straight six,
yeah,
yeah.
So maybe it's those.
But I don't think that was for the worst, personally. but yeah, I know what I mean. There'll be people.
No, but I think I agree with you. But I don't really know what the topic is.
But there will be people out there now that are in a new M3. That wish
yes,
they
okay.
had a V that you could have a V like the RS4 that's got an NAV8 in it.
It's the same people that will refuse to buy a liquid cooled 911 that will only buy an air cooled 911.
Yeah,
it's that. So that's what it is.
Yeah,
and I couldn't care less.
Me too.
I would buy a 996, a 997, a 930, a 35. Like,
so I would buy a modern GT3.
Okay, so yeah, there we go.
Right.
I think I just personally, yeah, I don't get hung up on it.
No. I'm not hung up on it, but I think the people would like it.
I think a 296 is as great as a 360 in as many ways.
Well, as a car, it's way better.
Yeah.
Like, as a machine.
Yeah.
Maybe not as a sounding engine.
I hope I've dug myself out of that hole.
No, you have, mate. But that's another thing. 296 with your Challenge engine in it. Is that going to be better or worse?
One of the... Yeah. Because the engine is special.
In my opinion, it is why you go and buy one.
A Stradale, yeah. You're right. It is.
Yeah. So what then?
I don't know.
Maybe this is a whole
this
episode.
That's what I'm saying. It's a thing, mate. Get them all rolled up. They'll love it. I'd be fuming. There'd be millions of people going in on them.
There'll be a million people right now saying that I am not a petrol head. I'm not a true... If I think engines aren't important, I don't understand cars.
If you think the 296 is a better car than a Challenge Sedale, are not a petrol head.
Let's just fold up this podcast and leave. Anyway, we'll draw a line out under there before I get myself into any more trouble. Maybe we should come back to that. Let us know your thoughts on the... Is it... It's specific now. I don't even know how to... Specific, do you?
It's a car crash, basically.
Very awkward topic to discuss.
Are there any older engines that would make a modern car better? They are,
yeah, okay, fine. Yes, that is the question.
Bring an old engine back,
bring an old engine, an old engine, and put it in the new
car. Is it better?
So, the RS4 V8 in the new one, or a Challenge Stradale engine in a 296? I think everyone's going to say yes, aren't they? I think everyone's going to say yes.
No, I wouldn't say yes because I think always manufacturers
get better.
Yes. They don't get worse to sell you a better product, don't they?
Oh, what a messy topic. Let's wrap things up. I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. If you want to follow Tony in the meantime and see all these cars that he's buying and selling, mainly selling, apparently, you can follow him at Tony Grewalwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass. This podcast is at behindtheglass_podcast. A reminder, audio versions of these episodes go live a few days before the YouTube episodes, but you can find both on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, most podcast players, YouTube as well. We're everywhere. Check us out. Check out our back catalogue, and we'll be back with you with fresh topics, probably the McCann EV chat next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.